welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotura, the chef in a hat.
And I'm Radio.
And as you all know, I own many restaurants here in downtown Seattle. Happy to be with you. Love doing this show every week. We're here for 2 hours to do this, and it's replayed a couple of times over the weekend.
Are you opening anything new, any new restaurants?
No, not right now. I'm not.
So you're going to stick with the 16 and that's
although
it?
My little partnership with Nordstrom in Las Vegas is starting the end of this month, so I'm excited about that.
Is it going to be another bento?
Nope, it's called Genie's Toasty Bar.
What is it called? I'm sorry, one more time.
Genie's Toasty Bar. Yeah.
So tartines and stuff like that?
Sure.
Toast?
Sure, why not?
Yeah. Sounds good.
It's in the Fashion Mall right on the strip next to Treasure Island.
Oh, yeah.
The end of this month, the end of October.
I know exactly where that Nordstrom is.
Oh, do you?
I do.
Well, that's funny.
Maybe I'll go visit it this month.
I've been visiting a few times myself. Anyway, we have a large show for you, as we do every week. We're going to talk about salmon from Bristol Bay. As you, many of you know, I'm a big supporter of the anti-pebble mine movement up there in Bristol Bay.
And also supporting the salmon.
And supporting the wild salmon, yep. We're going to eat some Icelandic food with Chef Hakan Mar Overson. She's coming to Cuoco Restaurant and going to visit the show today, talk about what they're going to make for Icelandic Food Week at Cuoco. We're going to share our tips and trips. Tips and ticks. Chips and tricks.
That's the one.
Is that like a Halloween thing?
I don't know. It got really scary in here.
We're
going to
share our tips and tricks for making delicious pudding with Chef Brittany Bartleben in the Baker's Corner today. I like when she comes. She's a bit feisty.
She's always on one. You know, she's probably been working since early in the morning, so she's really, you know, amped up by the time we receive her on the show.
Exactly. And we're going to take on each other in our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. I'm feeling a little worn out today. I had a big event at the Prosser Farm yesterday. I drove in this morning. I might need some audience help today.
Really?
Yeah. Those $25 checks.
I'm just saying. Just giving you the heads up.
Just making anybody
it's not really cheating if you let people know first.
Is that how that works? Is that what cheating is all
about? That's how I think
about
it in my mind.
Okay.
Like when I'm in the middle of the battle and you guys are kicking me and then I call somebody up, that's seriously
that
cheating.
Does, you know what? That does feel a little
but,
shifty.
But fair warning.
Me. Okay.
Tom is lobbying.
An assistant. Any good trivia folks out there?
A lot of people.
All right. You all stand up right there. Oh, that's no, Janet. Perfect. Janet doesn't count. She kicked her butt last week, so
Janet
she does
works
not,
here.
She
Janet,
does not get the play anymore.
You come with me.
Yeah, I am definitely a sore loser, Janet. What gave you your first idea about that? Okay, ordinary to extraordinary.
Yes, this is where you take some ordinary dishes and you make them extraordinary with your know-how and cunning. The first one is meatloaf, and this kind of came up because the New York Times did an article on meatloaf, and they made a bit of a, what could you call it? Could you call it really traditional or very non-traditional? It was non-traditional in the American meatloaf sense, and it had more of an Italian bent. But I was curious how you both... Here, I'm not even sure if you make meatloaves.
I have made meatloaf.
Yeah, you
especially for staff meal.
Okay, how do you make an extraordinary meatloaf for staff meal?
Well, I like to caramelize my onion. You know,
you make meatloaf for staff meal, really?
We've made.
I mean, a lot of people don't realize we make staff meal 3 times a day, seven days a week.
You got to feed the people. I haven't made it. This is not a lie. I have not made it in probably 7-8 years. This was memory of Rovers. I just remember last time I made it was 7-8 years ago, and it was delicious. But we, of course, could not just make a meatloaf. We had to spiff it up a little bit. Plus, we have more ingredients to play with. But
well, how convenient, because this segment is called Ordinary to Extraordinary.
Exactly.
So spiff it up. Tell us what
you
got.
So we caramelized the onion before we put it in the ground beef. It was a beef meatloaf, because some people make meatloaf with pork, right?
Nope.
No? Mm-hmm. Always beef? Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I was told some people make it with pork, too. That's a lie. Okay. ground beef, caramelized onion, toasted nuts, hazelnut and walnut, both of them. Lots of very fresh chopped thyme and chopped parsley. Once the caramelized onions are made, you mix the whole thing together. And then you just take your ground beef and you mix it together, put it in a terrine mold or in a, you know, I guess that would be called a... Meatloaf pan. Not a terrine mold. And then you bake it very slowly. And then what makes it extraordinary is, of course, that mashed potato that comes with it and a beautiful little sauce. Not a gravy.
What do you make your sauce out of?
Just reduced beef stock. reduce down with some red wine, and then finish with a little bit of butter, and then put that all around your meatloaf, and you have a very nice light meatloaf, mashed potato, and light.
Really?
Oh, just things.
Meatloaf and mashed potatoes.
You know how you make a, you know how you make a meatloaf light? You just slice it thin.
You slice it thinner. Exactly.
You eat less of it.
Yeah. I don't think I could go there after that. You know,
you don't feel like you can.
Well,
even talk
you've
about
got
meatloaf.
What a 48-hour beef stock reduction, and you've taken your.
Like I said, we had a little bit more
walnuts
angry
in their meatloaf.
Doesn't everybody has a little
walnuts?
Stock
anybody
in their
the
freezer? Don't
walnuts?
You guys have stock in your freezer? A little bit of stock in your freezer? You should. If
My
you don't,
God, what
but,
has
you know,
this country come to when you are allowed to put walnuts?
It's getting
in
better
your meatloaf.
By the day, Tom.
All right, okay. Tom, do you want to take on the next one?
Yes,
then?
I do.
All right, let's talk about chili. I feel like maybe you have an affinity towards some
something
chili.
He doesn't like.
I don't care for chili too much unless it is. Beanless chili. Then I like it.
Say,
or
come
like
on
a,
now.
Or like a chili verde, like a
That's
Mexican kind of pork
I'm
chili.
That's what I'm saying. Chili encompasses a wide range of dishes, and I feel like you like a nice hearty meat-based chili. So
I do.
Let's take either your verde or your no-bean chili.
I'm going to go with my my ancho chili.
Okay.
Do you know? No,
because it anchos. It's
yeah,
mine.
Yeah.
Anyway, I like to take the dried chilies, and I like to take them and toast them over an open flame,
mm-hmm.
give them a nice hard toast. Then I put them into a pan with some water or chicken stock or something like that, rehydrate them. It's a little bit of orange juice.
Yep.
And then I put them in a blender. Of course, I've taken the seeds out and the stem off. Put them in a blender, puree the whole thing up, and then I strain it, and that's the base for my chili.
Yummy.
In another pan, I'm searing some cubes of beef, and I'm sautéing the onions with that, and doing, what else would be good in the chili to make it extraordinary?
Garlic. Make
garlic,
some garlic.
Yeah, you know, things like that.
Tomato?
Then I combine the two. No, not too much. I like that.
No.
Maybe a can of tomato sauce with the chili paste.
Yeah.
But and then just let it simmer, and from there, I love it on a nice grilled piece of cornbread.
Ooh.
Just a little moist, cakey cornbread.
Yeah, and I like your cornbread recipe because you often use summer corn that you've grilled mm-hmm. and maybe you've frozen it, and mm-hmm. so it's just in the freezer yep. ready to be added to cornbread.
I always load it up with pepper jack cheese,
I can't believe
so it's kind of custardy.
So you don't like beans in general?
I'm just not a bean chili guy.
Huh, that's too bad.
Tina's saying wrap it up.
Wrap it up, Tina says. Up next, we're exploring Seattle and its unique eats experience with author Jake Udy. On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back in the Seattle kitchen. Jake Udy has joined us here. He's got a couple of new books. I'm not sure if they're actually new or not. It's just the second edition,
brand
right?
New.
Brand new.
Brand
second
new.
Edition.
Brand new.
100 Things to Do in Seattle Before You Die by Jake Udy, and that is UITTI. He also has Unique Eats and Eateries of Seattle. So one's more restaurants and one's more tourism-based,
yep.
huh?
The 100 Things has some restaurants in there, but the Unique Eats and Eateries is 90s Seattle restaurant tours, including both you fine gentlemen in the book.
Who came up first, Terry or myself?
Well, it was about the same time.
Well, he's much older than me. He should come up first.
Someone didn't answer the phone first, and so I had to go with the second choice, but ended up being the first choice.
Damn.
How did you choose the restaurants? What got you started down this path, and what qualifies you,
what
sir?
What qualifies? Well, I moved to Seattle about 11 years ago from the small town of Princeton, New Jersey. So when I got here, I was like super curious about the art scene, about music, and the creative art and performance scene, but I sort of got sucked into the restaurant and craft beer scene. I was the craft beer columnist for the Seattle Weekly for a couple of years, and I just found myself going to restaurant after restaurant kind of amazed at the plethora of what was here, and almost like by accident I was able to come up with a list once the publisher reached out to me to do a book for it. It was like, oh, okay, yeah, I can actually do this. I thought maybe the list would take a couple of weeks, but really it took a day or two to just think about all the places that I really enjoyed
so
in the
many.
City. Yeah.
It's the small town of Princeton, New Jersey. Is that a typical college town dining destination where there's not a damn thing to eat?
Yeah, well, it's outside, it's an hour from New York, hour from Philadelphia, and it's sort of like, it's a well-known university, so it has some stuff in there, like some nice Chinese restaurants, some Greek places, of course some dive bars, and I sort of grew my love for food while being there, but when I came to Seattle, I had no idea the sort of the explosion. I think I sort of came around the same time that many more restaurants were coming up in Seattle, mm-hmm. it was sort of owning itself as a culinary destination. And so, I just got involved, and I was able to make up the list and then write the book sort of Not too difficultly thereafter, which is maybe a surprise.
So you're saying, like, in a day you were able to come up with this list, but then that begs the question, how did you narrow it down? I think that's where I would have a difficult time, is, like, really getting a fair swath.
Yeah, it was, you know, it could be kind of tough. It also, like, because I wanted to make sure that I was able to interview everybody for the book. So it came, I probably had to cut a couple of people, a couple of spots who weren't available or who didn't get back to me for interviews, but I just went neighborhood by neighborhood and thought, like, what are the best places? What are the places that I really enjoy going there? What are the places that I could speak to in a positive light and a sort of a glowing light? Including the Carlisle Room, including Lule, actually, yeah.
Fun. So, any surprises when you were heading around, when you talk to owners of restaurants where you're just a customer? You tend to not really know much more than the food, right?
Yeah.
Or do you like the atmosphere or not? I think it's interesting to get to know the people behind the restaurants.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That 100%. That was what sort of came out for me. Like, Tacos Chuquis in Capitol Hill, the owner, when he graduated college, he wanted to work in restaurants, and he actually sort of to take some a placeholder, he applied to Gap, and they didn't call him back. And then he rode his bike from Seattle to Tijuana just to, like, figure out what to do with his life. And it's like, that's really unusual. And then the owner of Yoroshiku, which is a great ramen restaurant in Wallingford, he was in Seattle as an electrician, and then his visa expired, and he had to go back to Asia. And then he learned on the fly to be a ramen chef so that he could come back to Seattle because he couldn't get another visa for being an electrician. So they said, oh, well, you can be a ramen chef. And so he came back over. So getting behind the scenes, behind the food, behind the storefronts for all these books, or for all these restaurants, was super interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I bet. That's great stories out there.
Yeah.
I am 60 years old now.
Okay.
And so this one that you wrote, 100 Things to Do in Seattle Before You Die, is very relevant to me right now.
You got it. How many do you think you've done in there?
I don't know, but there's 100 here that would suggest.
And you don't have to die immediately after doing all of them.
You just got to do it before
you can do it again one more time.
But I'm just saying, I have to get on my horse here, so to speak. So give me a couple of things that that I need to do.
One thing I think you would really enjoy is the I Fly, which is the indoor... what is that?
Down in Renton?
Indoor skydiving.
Skydiving.
Absolutely. Where they get the jets going really fast underneath you, and they sort of, like, turn you, and then you're just there.
Just like diving.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. Nothing would make me happier than to go do this with Tom.
I think it's time.
That would be very
road
fun.
Trip.
What would the weight differential issue, like,
I don't
the
think...
jets underneath me would have to be a lot, moving a lot faster
the
than
the turbines.
You.
I would
really
never skydive, but I would do that.
Would you?
Because if I skydived, I would die after, and there's one thing to do.
Do you have like a mattress below you or something, like a double spring, a box spring mattress?
No, there's a net.
There's a net.
Yeah, so you don't hurt yourself on the tile floor.
Okay.
So that's one thing. Stand-up paddleboard yoga, is that anybody's favorite thing to do?
Oh,
here?
I think that's Tina. Yeah. Tina, the producer.
Really? Down I've Green seen Lake. People do that outside of Ray's Boathouse.
Yeah, that also makes
that looks
me
like the stupidest thing I've ever
Wait,
done.
So you do yoga
nervous.
On the paddleboard?
Yeah.
It's not hard enough to stand up on the paddleboard?
Well, apparently, I would fall off immediately. I would be with the turtles.
Because I think I'd be, I think I would like to stand up first.
Yeah.
Something
then we
tells
can talk
me
about
that,
yoga later.
Something tells me that both of these books probably work really nicely in conjunction with one another. Like, if I was doing stand-up paddleboarding, which happens down, in Ballardine, is that right? Where would I then go and eat after I do a little yoga sesh?
Yeah.
Well, I think the stand-up paddleboard that I know is in Green Lake, and...
Ballard.
Do they have Ballard as well?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So where would I go in Ballard? Hotel Albatross is somewhere I would go in Ballard for their puffy tacos.
Mm.
And I totally agree. I think the book, you can find the things that you want to do in the book, and then there's all the restaurants that would complement it afterwards.
Yes. That's my favorite thing to do when I travel. It's like, well, how am I going to get to that neighborhood? Well, I know I want to eat something in that neighborhood more than likely, and that's generally what directs me to new parts of town.
Absolutely. The two birds with one stone.
So, Katie O, if you were in your neighborhood, you're kind of north central district, right?
Yeah,
or
exactly.
East Central District?
Yeah, yeah.
What would you tell Jake that he would have to do in your neighborhood, and then what would you eat after or before?
Let's see. What would you do in my neighborhood? I think we would go on a walk. We would actually only eat. I think that's predominantly what you and I would do.
Have you been to Fats Chicken and Waffles?
I've been to Fats.
Fats is like my favorite.
But I will say I am a big fan of Standard Brewing out there. You can go and eat some really delicious onion dip and chips, and then you can go across the way, go to Woodshop, get some very delicious smoked chicken wings.
Can you take a tour of the Franz Bakery?
Oh, you know, they do have the outlet store, though.
Yeah, they have the outlet.
I don't know if they conduct anything. That is actually, I have to say, hand to God. One of my favorite things is I love that smell.
Like,
I kind of am like, today they smell like they're cooking something that maybe has raspberry jam in it. Mm-hmm. And then the next day you're like, are they making maple bars? They don't make maple bars, do they? But that sure smells like, you know, those things. So that's
I think they do make maple bars.
Both of my kids went to that middle school.
Yep.
I tell you, going and taking the kids in the morning and smelling that friend's bakery,
like
that's killer, man.
It's like killer.
You're like thinking of, I was thinking, oh, they must be making some beautiful croissant.
Yeah.
Terry, so you have a minute. What would you do? What would you tell Jake to do?
In Madison Valley, I mean, Tom makes a joke often. In Madison Valley, you know, you could go Spanish and go to the Harvest Vine. You could go down to Luke.
Soul food restaurant there,
but culturally,
yeah.
What would you do?
Soul food. It's a soul food restaurant in Simply Soul Food. Delicious. You could go to Nishino, get some sushi.
Chef, we know all the restaurants. What would you do? You have to combine it like we're combining his
book. And he would take a long walk through the Arboretum. That's one of my favorite things to do. And the Japanese Cultural Garden, which is really beautiful.
So
it's
then
very
you would
cool.
pick Nishino.
Yeah, I would pick Nishino because when you come out of the Arboretum, make a left and you're there.
What a beautiful day that would be.
Yeah.
So, Jake, it seems to me like Katie has set you up to sell this as a two-pack for a Christmas present.
Exactly. Perfect for the
You're
holidays.
You're welcome, Jake. Marketing. Thank always
you,
marketing.
All right. The two books are Unique Eats and Eateries of Seattle by Jake Uitti, U-I-T-T-I, and also the second edition of 100 Things to Do in Seattle Before You Die. Now, if it's the second edition and you did the first 100 and then you died, like, are you left out?
It's funny. I know we're short on time, but the first edition was written by another author, and it was burned up in a warehouse, but the publisher had a fire in St. Louis, and so that's why they asked me to do this one. So the first edition was not written by me. And they're all gone.
Okay.
So buy mine.
So the first one is Ashes to Ashes. The first one is Ashes to Ashes.
That one actually did die.
Coming up, did you know that PCC runs a farmland trust? Brennan Davis and Melissa Campbell are here to explain and celebrate the $1 million gift they just received for it on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show. The chef and the chapeau is audience motivating. Katie O is on the mic.
Sure am.
And we have our guests from PCC Farmland Trust with Brennan Davis and Melissa Campbell. Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
For having
How
us
are
here
you
today.
All?
Thanks for
it's
having
so
nice
us.
To see you.
So you have some big news out there, and you know, I understood. Just correct me if I'm wrong, because we've had the Farmland Trust on before. It's not PCC's Farmland Trust, is that right? You are a major sponsor of it. Is that true?
Right. PCC founded the Farmland Trust in the '90s when we had a farmer who was a carrot farmer, and there's property next to his farm that was going to be developed and turned into a big, you know, take farmland and turned into a big another housing development. Mm-hmm. And he asked us if we could help out, so we provided the funding to purchase that land and started the Farmland Trust. So it's a separate 501c3 from us, but yeah, we did found it.
And you've been consistent supporters since you started that, right?
Since the beginning, yes. Mm-hmm. We've been consistent with funding. And then we just made $1 million commitment to support their Farms Forever campaign. And I'll let you talk about that.
All right.
Sure.
You have to. You can't just. And we just added $1 million.
Yeah, exactly.
No, $1 million.
Very casual. Oh, 1 million.
I know we live in Seattle, where $1 million is not really $1 million.
I know, and
but
I'm actually
still.
From Seattle, so I'm kind of understated, I'll say.
Anyway, you go for it. You make it sound more exciting.
No pressure. Okay, so, you know, we call PCC our founder, our funder, and our friend, and that has a lot to do with our roots, and they grew the Farmland Trust to...
No pun intended on the roots?
Pardon. Pardon in advance to all the agricultural puns. They're everywhere. But they founded us 20 years ago, and they've been the steady hand at the wheel that's helped grow this organization. And 20 years ago, we were a staff of one that was largely funded and in-house of PCC, and now we're 14 staff, and we're amidst a $26 million campaign to protect the last best pieces of farm ground in the Puget Sound region. And so we're here today celebrating the $1 million gift from our founder, our funder, and our friend, which will go a long way to help stabilize the organization financially and allow us to accelerate our farmland conservation efforts.
So are these farmland next to each other, or are they separated throughout the Puget Sound?
So we're a statewide organization. We've conserved 23 farms and 2,500 acres across the state of Washington, but we're really focused here on Puget Sound because that's where we're losing farmland the fastest,
right.
Particularly Snohomish and Pierce counties. So we have a theory of conservation and concentration. Farmers make the best neighbors to one another, and they're not successful or viable when they're in the middle of a development. So
right.
we want farms to be nearby and proximate to one another. And right. that's what maintains the fabric of our agricultural communities.
Right. It also keeps the land clean.
That's
if
right.
you have nothing around it,
that's
it's easier
right.
to keep it clean than if you have big buildings all around your carrots.
Exactly.
Yes, it does, especially when it's organic,
yeah.
too. No pesticides and keeping the land
good
in
job.
The environment.
Thank you.
You should be very proud of yourself.
Thank you.
Especially in the world where land is disappearing at the speed of light. So,
once you buy the land, how do you manage it? Does the trust own it? Or do you have long-term leases on it? How does it work for the farmer?
So we have a couple of different ways. So we either conserve the land by just purchasing a conservation easement, which means a farmer continues to own the land, but it's conserved as farmland forever. And there's a restriction on the deed that every time it's sold, it stays as farmland. That restriction also makes sure it's much more affordable. So the restriction values the property at agricultural value. So when a farm transitions, a farmer can buy it at agricultural prices. But recently, because of the declining population of farmers, the average age is 58, we often meet farmers who are done farming, and they have a value for conservation, but they just need to sell outright. So we come in and we buy the farm, and we either find a new tenant or a new owner and hold that land, or we'll immediately flip the switch and sell the property to a farmer outright. So we either buy and hold it for a long period of time, or we'll buy and sell it.
Mm-hmm. And if you sell it, do you ask them to keep it as farming land?
We do. We will sell it with that conservation restriction so we can get it back in the hands of farmers and ensure that it's affordable farmland forever.
How common is it these days to see, say, farmland that's been in ownership of, say, someone who is maybe ready to give up that land being passed down to the next generation? Is that fairly common, or is that less common these days?
So is it is your question, how often do we see farmers who are ready to take over?
Correct, like generationally speaking, within the same family.
That's really unusual, and yeah. that's part of what is the primary barrier to farmers who want to start farming or expand farming, is they're not inheriting the land from their parents or family members. And a lot of times when you are a farmer and you want to pass that land to someone in your family, there's not anyone there. And so the trust has had to build some strategies and tools. We just launched a program called Farm to Farmer that actually matches farmers who want to sell or lease their land to farmers who are looking for land. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's a big problem. 70% of our land across the U.S. is set to transition to the next generation, and many of those, the bulk of them, do not and have not assigned a successor mm-hmm. for who's going to take over that land. Mm-hmm.
Or you could be Bill Gates and just buy a $140 million swath of land in Benton County.
Yeah.
That was pretty interesting this last week. From the PCC angle of things,
yeah.
Does this help preserve your mission of serving or selling organic produce and kind of being close to the land? And
yes, it does. So our mission is to make sure that the organic supply chain thrives. And what that means for us is just making sure that the land in the Pacific Northwest is conserved, that there's opportunities for farmers to continue organic and sustainable farming. And there are a lot of different farms in the state that we're working with. But one interesting partnership we are working on is a new baguette with Macrina Bakery that features a farmland trust wheat that was grown on a farmland trust farm. Mm. And we're making this new baguette. It comes out soon. Do you want to talk a little bit about the farmer?
Sure. Yeah, so we partnered with a farmer to conserve 300 acres over in Walla Walla. And they farm 3,000 acres out in Walla Walla, but 300 of it is protected forever as farmland. And they're just super entrepreneurial guys. Mm-hmm. And they've created this partnership with Macrina to source product and millet and then turn it into a baguette, which some of the proceeds from the sales of the baguette will go back to the Farmland Trust. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hope you'll get a chance to try it. We should bring you one so you can
absolutely.
Have a taste.
Leslie Mackey is
made
a favorite
in the
of
Northwest.
Mine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she started Macrina I don't know, 29 years, 28 years
ago?
Well,
I think you're celebrating 25 years.
25 this year? Yeah.
Yeah. And PCC is celebrating our 65th anniversary. We just came out with a new cookbook, which I saw, Terry, you were
it's
walking
right there.
In with.
Yeah.
But it's called Cooking from Scratch, and there are some really great recipes in there. We even had people on social media that wanted a recipe, like, for green gazpacho soup, and it wasn't in there. So we've been helping them and providing recipes. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of excitement around it.
Is Lynn Villa still your chef?
She is.
She
Isn't
is.
She wonderful?
I haven't seen her in a long time.
Oh, really?
She's so good on the radio. You should
send
her.
Oh, she's really good. Yeah,
way.
We will. I'll make sure we do. Yeah.
All right. I'm a big fan. My CEO, Pamela, our Chief Vegetable CVO, Chief Vegetable
Vegetable Officer.
And CEO is such a big fan of yours that she drives through Fremont every day just to go to the PCC in Fremont.
This is wonderful. This is how I also feel about PCC. It's because of these actions that you do to the Farmland Trust and just everything that you do to promote, you know, local, sustainable, these organic farms that really draw me all the way from the Central District over into Columbia City. And I know that a lot of, you know, my peers are exactly the same way. We want to support these markets because they are so beloved to us.
Oh, thank you so much. We really appreciate that. And, you know, being working at PCC and having grown up in Seattle, I mean, for me, PCC is like the quintessential Seattle experience. I mean, you can't get more Seattle than PCC, really. And it's exciting as we're growing. We have 11 stores now and just opened one in Burien, which has been a great success. And we're just, as we grow, we just expand that organic and sustainable supply chain so that more people have access to it. And we support these local farmers, and we're able to do more to support the Farmland Trust.
Are you still coming to Medicine Valley?
We still are, yeah.
Good.
So excited about that.
I mean, right down my neighborhood.
For sure, yeah.
I'm a PCC a block away. I'm
not everyone can afford farmers markets prices and things like that. And PCC is certainly not known for being the least expensive, but certainly the best breadth of ingredients that you can in order to live more sustainably. And
I also think that there is plenty of ways to shop at PCC. I know it sometimes has that rap of being a little bit more expensive, but when you think about the quality of the product, we talk about this a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're eating kind of whatever cheese, you're going to put a lot of cheese on your dish, for example. Mm-hmm. But if you get a delicious Parmesan Reggiano that's rich in flavor, you're probably less likely to use quite as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think about that a lot when I think about PCC ingredients, and especially that bulk section. You can't beat that bulk section.
Gosh, I was just going to talk about that.
Yes.
Well, you only have 30 seconds,
the best
so go for
way.
It.
That is one of the best ways to shop affordably is to use a bulk section. And you can bring your own jars. You just come in, you weigh your jars, and then you can do all this great bulk shopping. Some of it's organic. Some of it's like transitional organic. It's awesome. Mm. And then you weigh your jar, and you go out the door. So you don't even have to use plastic bags. It's an awesome way to shop. So
we've been chatting with Brenna Davis from PCC, the social Enviro title?
Yeah, Vice President of Social and Environmental Responsibility.
There you go.
Yep.
And also from the PCC Farmland Trust, Associate Director Melissa Campbell, thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you so much for turning Seattle's dollars into donations
for
Farmland Trust. That is awesome. We appreciate it so much. Up next, it's Seafood 101 Month. We've been celebrating all October, and we're going to have some folks from Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association here. Get a little caught up on the mine issue and get a little caught up on the amazing run that they've had this year of sockeye salmon on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We're back in the kitchen. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
Terry Rotiroli stepping in.
And Katie O.
We're going to moon dance on the deck of a trawler today. Captain Michael Jackson.
Gil Netter,
sorry.
As well you should
sorry.
Be.
Sorry. You guys hate each other?
It's not hate, no. There's too much love in this world.
Do you sabotage like each other's nets? And
no comment.
Yep. Are you still drilling holes on the bottom of the boat?
It's Seafood 101 Month with the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association joining us today. Captain Matt Marikovich and Captain Michael Jackson are both owners and board members of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Association, and Michael is here with us. And you must never be able to live that name down.
It's getting better. Better and better.
Yeah, as the days continue to pass without
I'm almost
his
ready
presence.
To start my childhood.
The only question I have is, can you moonwalk on the duck?
I have never heard that a million times.
Exactly.
And the answer is no. No. And I'd also like to say Matt is not here. He had a family emergency, so he's not going to be able to join us.
All right.
He was very much looking forward to working with people, so thank you.
Cool. So tell us what you brought here. We took a picture of it for our Facebook page. It looks like a big box of salmon.
We have in front of us some beautiful Bristol Bay sockeye. It's wild. It's sustainable. It's ruby red flesh. And as Chef Tom and Chef Thierry can attest, the flavor is unique.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very unique.
Definitely.
And it seems to be the model of well-managed fishery. I have, I don't know if you know or not, but I sponsored a movie called The Breach, and we talk a lot about salmon and where it's going and the managed fisheries and eating wild to save wild. The theory in my mind is, and many of us, is if you don't support the wild fishery, the people of the area will choose something else to do to make money, to put their kids into school, and to do all the things that they want to do with their life. And so if you manage this fishery beautifully, that, in my mind, is the best way to save the wild fish so that we don't end up with Pebble Mine or something like that in the headwaters there because people need to make a living.
Well, and I want to thank you for your efforts on behalf of wild fish, and particularly Bristol Bay. I'm very familiar with The Breach,
uh-huh.
and it's a wonderful movie on a number of levels, but it really points out the fact that you need to take care of your habitat. And our habitat in Bristol Bay is absolutely unique. It's totally diverse, and that's what makes it succeed. We have set a record this year for total harvest, 61 million fish. That's ever the most fish caught ever. Where else can you say that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so and not hurting the population.
No,
which is exactly.
What's important to remember, it's sustainable.
Yeah, it's totally sustainable, and I think that's a really good point that you brought up, Chef, that it keeps the local population harvesting traditional methods.
Yeah, and the more you fish, I mean, not the more you fish, but fishing that kind of behavior will keep you alive, will keep you sustainable, and we look forward to next year.
And next year and next year.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, that's the whole goal. And there's still to be determined how much of this is coming because of the different water currents. And because they've had some tough struggles in southeast Alaska this year. So who knows if these fish are, you know, going up to a different opportunity where the water temperature is correct or whatever. But I do know that there's a lot of science happening in Bristol Bay. And I love that. And it's part of why I like supporting the Seafood 101 Month. You're just part of this big program. We've had cod fishermen on. Mm-hmm. We've had all sorts of different fishermen from Alaska for seafood.
Alaska King Crab.
And we're going to be at
the
Pacific Marine Expo the 18th through the 20th of November. We have a show there live. If you
yes,
want to come down,
we always
hang out
do
and ask
it.
Questions. And
yeah.
We always have some stud fishermen there, like mm-hmm. Mr. Michael Jackson here, or
you know, we often talk about the vegetable and the fruit farmer and the grape farmer, but we have to remember that you fish farmers are also very much part of the culture around here, especially
well,
in the Pacific Northwest.
We are fish harvesters. We're not fish farmers.
Yes, let's correct. Be very
we're
clear. Yes.
Okay, my bad.
It's okay.
I was trying to say you're like a farmer.
We are. We,
but you're
we
not
harvest.
Farming. You're
we
thinking,
harvest
you're collecting
a sustainable
the,
resource.
Right.
And it's a wonderful opportunity.
Good
I absolutely
correction.
Love it. I've got my two older sons. They're involved in the fishery.
Mm-hmm.
They were raised on the boat. They have their own boats now, and it's just a great family occupation.
Okay, right. So there's the begs the question, what do the fishermen, how do they cook sockeye salmon?
Right.
Because in my mind, it's a little bit of a lean fish. You can't overcook it at all. Almost has to be eaten rare, in my opinion. And so how do you like to cook sockeye?
I love the fact you point out with sockeye, if you cook it till it's done, you're too late.
Yeah. You're too dry.
Yes. It's so how
sure.
I like to cook it is, it's really simple. I use toasted sesame oil, just a very light coating of that. Sprinkle some Himalayan sea salt on it, barbecue it.
Mm-hmm.
And once the fat starts popping out, comes off the grill, it'll keep cooking until it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still moist and very flavorful, just that little bit of toasted sesame.
And these aren't the biggest fish. They usually 5 to 8 pounds or so, right? What's the largest sockeye you've ever seen?
Oh, boy, I don't know if I could put a number on it. I'd say anywhere from 12 to 15
really?
Pounds. They're lunkers. When they hit the deck, when you're picking it, it's like everyone stops and goes, what was
whoa,
that?
There's a big
that's a little different. It's like a drum.
A big thud.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think you made a good point there. When you're cooking sockeye salmon, you really have to get your sear on it. It's a thin fish generally, a thin fillet. You can still put your thermometer in there when you're cooking it and get a number, but you have to act quickly. So if you want to pull it at 110, 115 degrees, by the time you serve that fish 3 minutes later, it'll be at 120, and you'll have a perfect medium rare. And it is a no-fail way to actually cook the fish rather than guessing or kind of pressing on it. Like, this is the first time this year I've cooked sockeye, and you're pressing on it, you're supposed to really know something. It just doesn't seem to work that way.
Well,
Terry, how about you?
I'm a big fan of baking it. You know, if you put, and also if I'm going to grill it, one of my safeties, I put like olive tapenade. I do a bunch of chopped olive and I put that right on top of the salmon before I put it on the barbecue. So now I'm safe and covered. I got a little covering on top of the salmon. So I can bake for like 8 minutes, a nice piece of 7 minutes, put a nice piece of salmon on the barbecue, the whole fillet, and then put it out, put it on the platter, serve it, and it stays moist.
With beautiful presentation.
Yeah, and it's delicious with the olives on top. I'm a fan of that. So
it's just it's a really perfect protein. And it, again, knowing that it's a sustainably sourced product, I think is a really, really important factor. And just an easy weeknight meal, frankly. I think about it all the time of picking up some salmon, some sockeye salmon from Bristol Bay. You have a nice little rice bowl. You have some pickles on the side. And just a simply seared piece of salmon is perfect.
And it's freeze perfectly. I mean, it, we know you just thaw it out gently, and then, you know, it's a beautiful piece of fish. It freezes very nicely.
And it starts with our harvesting techniques. Right. I mean, we use best practices. I say the fish, when we pick it, it hits the deck. Actually, we use slides and mats, so the fish doesn't even hit the deck.
Doesn't
it hits something soft.
Mm-hmm.
It goes right into refrigerated seawater where it's floated, so they're not rubbing against each other, right. Processed within 24 hours. So we take pride in how we harvest our fish and how it's processed.
Well, we appreciate
it. Shows, and it shows at the end.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you to Michael Jackson, captain up in the Bristol Bay area, and also a board member of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association.
Oh. Can I say one thing?
Yes.
We're having a promotion at the QFC stores with Bristol Bay Sockeye, and it's running from November 9th through the 17th. So keep your eyes open for free tasting of beautiful, wild, sustainable Bristol Bay Sockeye.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yum. QFCs. You might be able to buy some of my salmon rub there right next to the seafood department.
Looks like we're all going to QFC.
Cross promotion.
Oh, I'm going to put my perfume in there.
Exactly. Well, speaking of perfume, Chef, did you ever, I don't want you to like puke in your car right now, but did you ever think about trying to smell just like Chef Thierry Rotureau?
You know, many people would wish that.
Many people would
many
wish
people.
That?
Some probably are disgusted by the idea, but that's just the way life works.
It would just
works.
Be me.
Not all salmon are perfect.
All right, up next, we're going to smell like Terry for a whole segment on Camera Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. This is the Seattle Kitchen Show, and Chef Thierry Rotureau is here. KDO is here. And I'm going to do a hard-hitting interview on The Chef in the Chateau.
Really?
Ooh, we are going to get down and dirty.
All right.
All right. Because, you know, he's jumping out of his field a little bit and into the toilet, so to speak.
Not the toilet. The perfume world.
The perfume world.
Yeah. So
it's eau de toilette.
Eau de toilette.
Toilette. Sorry.
Yes.
Sorry.
It's not toilet
hey,
water.
Hey, I'm the interviewer here, buddy.
Yeah, speak French, will you?
Phew, this stuff stinks. He sprayed me with this. Anyway, last week you had...
nice thought. Oh, this stinks. Buy it.
Last week you had a little champagne party that I wasn't invited to, and apparently delicious champagne, delicious appetizers.
Right.
I was available
and
wasn't invited, and you had a bunch of people to your restaurant to debut a new perfume line.
A fragrance. It's not a perfume, it's a fragrance.
It smells like perfume to me.
Yeah, that's because you don't
I'm
know
doing
the difference between
here.
Eau de toilette and perfume.
So eau de toilette, so let's talk about that. So you go to the restroom, you put your hand in the toilet, and you come... No.
That's the way you know it.
Oh, okay.
But in France, we do it differently.
Okay, explain.
We take an oil of a perfume, and then you don't have to be so exaggerating, Mr. Douglas. He's like trying to clean his hand now. Oh, my God. This is like trying to sell a perfume to this guy would be like...
Let's stay on track here.
All right.
So what is...
So we released a line of fragrances called Lule, under the Chef in the
you
Hat.
You just released it on me. I know.
Yes, I did. Yes. Yeah. I spread you like Pepe Le Pew. Anyway, we have three ingredients. We have a diffuser, which is also made with oil. We have a hand soap finished with olive oil that is made with also oil. And we have an eau de toilette, which is a diluted oil. Eau de toilette is... If you take a perfume which is made with oil, you take eau de toilette and you add alcohol to it and you dilute it. Kind of like a cocktail idea where you dilute the essence. The main ingredients of the fragrance are figs, green tea, lime, and bergamot. So I'm a, you know, vibrant.
Bergamot tea?
Bergamot, no, the plant. Bergamot.
Oh, the plant, okay.
The leaves, which is, by the way, the highest component of Earl Grey. So that's how you know bergamot, very familiar right. to most people. It's a very vibrant smell when you put it on. It's pretty vibrant.
For sure.
And then you wait a few minutes and it tames away and becomes you. It is very, very, very soft and it does not impregnate the whole room or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's just very personal. Mm-hmm. I think Eau de Toilette is nice. It's kind of like a little shot of espresso when you put it on. It's a little vibrant.
So why would a dude wear it? Or is that just a stupid old-fashioned question?
Of what? I'm sorry?
Why would a dude wear it? I mean,
that's an old-fashioned
The women
question.
Here aren't
that's
attacking me
old,
right now.
That's a very old-fashioned, Tom. Very old question.
Okay.
You know, to most people, first of all, most people will never notice you're wearing that because you're not getting close enough. If somebody really embraces you, then they will smell a little bit of that. But mm-hmm. it's not a perfume where the fragrance is in your face, kind of like 5 feet away. You can, what are you wearing?
See, yes. I've never worn, in one day, 1 minute in my life, I've never worn a cologne, I've never worn anything
no, but
other
were,
than my
but,
deodorant.
But you wore salmon, you wore beef.
I do
you
wear salmon.
I mean, you know, we've all been there, and you know, it's nice.
So what you're saying is after I butcher a salmon, I'm all fishy, I just spray the eau de toilette on me, and...
Well, don't even wash your hands.
Yeah, exactly. I would say, first wash your hands,
okay,
and then really thoroughly wash your hand. And then put a little spray, you know. And the spray, I like to put it in the neck, bottom of the neck.
You do not. On your décolletage?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
What was wrong with that?
That is frisky.
That is personal. That is what I like to do. I like to be the one smelling it. I'm not trying to have everybody smell it. I'm trying to be the one smelling it.
Uh-huh.
So you put it there. It's vibrant. And then, you know, within a few minutes, it tames down. And you just have a little hint of it from time to time. And it's mm-hmm. beautiful.
Well, see, those are things I did not know. Katie, what do you think about this? You have this look like you're disgusted with me right now.
I'm not disgusted with you. I'm just surprised that throughout all these years as a well-established man that you did not know about, you know, men wearing cologne and perfumes.
Well, now that I think about it, I think about that sort of thing. I didn't know about Eau de Toilette. But I do know, like, there's... So, Ralph Lauren perfume out there. Yeah, I've seen all
so
that.
So cologne is actually even more diluted than Eau de Toilette. So that gives you an idea of level. Cologne is very high on alcohol, so it's very strong to start with, mm-hmm. and then it tames away as well. But Eau de Toilette is a bit more delicate than cologne. Mm-hmm. Cologne is the bottom of the lines of strength.
Mm-hmm. Though I think anything can be overdone. You could wear
absolutely.
Too much Eau de Toilette, or you could wear not very much cologne. And,
correct.
You know, I think... What you're saying, though, which is nice, is that when you put something like that on, to not put a ton on so that it can kind of meld with your chemistry and,
right.
and your natural sense.
And then one thing that I discovered, Tom, so let me tell you the story how this started.
I was going to say, because you're a chef, so this is a departure, right?
So
this
at Lule, we were looking for a fragrance for a restroom, and I found this, one of my bartenders, her girlfriend, is a local artisanal perfumer. She studied in Grasse, in France, in Provence, capital of the world of perfume. I was like, oh, this is very interesting. So we start talking, and then she start telling me how this whole process works, you know, mix this, mix that. I was like, wait a minute. This is exactly up my alley. This is what I do in the kitchen. Why don't I just play with you? And we went in your studio and play with some beakers and created this scent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how she was like, what do you like? So you would be amazed. You would love this because I know you like testing different kind. I see it at the summer camp and whatever when you have 20 different kind of chocolate or salt or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I know you like that kind of education. It's very educational to see all the different scents that are available on the market. And I didn't see them all because there's an unbelievable number.
But and you tried to stay in the food world?
I tried to stay in the food world, and I tried to stay in something that's clean to me. I don't like to have... I'm not a big fan of, like, there are some smell that come from wood. You know, wood smell, for example, that are really musty and very strong. And I didn't want to create anything like that for that line for Lule. Don't forget, we use it in diffuser and hand soap. So I wanted it to be, I didn't want the person to come back to the table and go, I just washed my hands. The whole restaurant knows it. You know, it's like, I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
Or the diffuser in the restroom where you're like, holy cow, I have a headache coming out of this bathroom. So all these components were part of the study and doing all this mixing with Molly Ray, the perfumer. And we had a wonderful time, and we created this line. And I went, why not? I'm 59 years old. Why don't I try something else?
Very interesting. I'm proud of you for trying it. Don't spray it on me anymore. And I'm going to do one, I think, to come out and compete with you in barbecue spice. Barbecue eau de toilette.
You know what?
Smoky.
Let's see which one of us sells the
most.
Smoky
hot.
Yes.
It's going to be smoky hot.
So you can find you can buy them at chefinthehatfragrances.com.
Okay.
You can buy them online.
Right.
Or at Lule, if you come and visit us, we'll have some for sale, too.
Sounds like fun. Thank you, Chef Rotoro. Up next, Chef Hakan Mar Overson is here from Iceland, and he is going to tell us all about the intersection of his restaurant from Reykjavik and Cuoco, our Italian restaurant in South Lake Union, on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotero, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
Katie, have you ever come to one of our Icelandic dinners?
I haven't. Am I in trouble
thanks
now?
Thanks for your support.
I know. Oh. I knew that was going to happen.
No, it's just super fun.
Admitted.
Do you know what Icelandic food is?
I think I'm going to get a really good idea right now.
Let's do that.
Let's
do it. Hakan Mar Overson is here. Hello, Hakan.
Hello. Hello, Chef.
Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show. Welcome to Seattle. So when did you get in? And you got in last night?
Last night with Icelandair.
Icelandair. I take it all the time when I go to Glasgow. I belong to a golf club north of Glasgow, and I stop in Reykjavik.
Convenient.
Yes, we've
except
all been,
stop.
We've like, all been talking about how we take Iceland Air to wherever it is we're going in Europe, and that we have not done our due diligence by stopping in Iceland as we are capable of doing.
Do you have a restaurant in Reykjavik?
Yes, I do.
Good.
And downtown.
Do you want to tell us the name of it?
Essencia.
Essencia. Nice.
Essencia.
Very nice.
It's taken from the word essence.
Yeah. And where? What kind of food do you do?
Italian.
Good.
You do not. Do you really?
Really, yeah.
Isn't that funny? That's why we teamed up with the Cuoco. I didn't know that connection.
That is the connection, yes.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
I thought you
were pulling my leg when you said it so quickly like that.
Because that would be the kind of answer I would give. But
I know, exactly.
It actually goes very well with the Icelandic produce.
Oh, yeah?
It's a lot of fish, lamb, cold waters, Arctic, free range. So it goes very well with the beautiful, simple presentation and cooking of food.
Exactly. So this is our fifth year of doing this together, your 11th year of Icelandic chefs coming across the Atlantic and across the pole and joining a local chef here in Seattle to feature Icelandic food for a week. We've been doing it at the Dahlia, we've done it at the Carlisle Room, and now at our restaurant Cuoco in South Lake Union. You're going to join Chef Ron Anderson there for a week and show us your stuff. I mean, kind of give us your take on Italian food here in Seattle with Icelandic ingredients, correct?
Yeah exactly.
Look and that's coming up the 11th through the 14th, right?
Yeah.
So it's coming up this weekend. That's cool. I need to make a reservation. Gosh.
So we call it an Icelandic restaurant takeover. Like you said, it's 11th to the 14th. It's $80. And I can't wait. You know, Iceland is also famous for its music scene.
Exactly.
You have a favorite artist that you listen to?
Yes.
Probably quite a
there
few.
There are so many.
And there are so many.
They're coming up every year, something new.
Uh-huh.
There is, yeah, they you know, Björk is one of the most famous, of course. She lead the way.
I always think of her as the most famous Icelandic artist, at least certainly when I was growing up as a teenager. Like, Björk was like the music for us here in Seattle, certainly.
We always thought she was kind of wacky.
No!
She always had that kind of weird, crazy outfit.
She's an artist. She's eccentric. That's
she's
what
like
she
a northern
does.
Light in my mind.
She is a little bit of a northern light, for sure.
She's a northern
for
light.
Sure.
All right, let's get into the menu a little bit. So one of the first things we're going to feature at Cuoco with you is Arctic char. Yep. What do you like about that fish? How's it caught? Is it all farm-raised now? All that sort of thing. Tell us about
so
char.
So it's inland farmed.
Okay.
In cold waters, of course. I like to cook it very gently to like a medium point. I have the special way of smoking the fish for half an hour just to get a nice smoky flavors to it. I spread it with a little salsa verde. I put a small croutons on top for a texture. and crispy capers, deep fried.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Underneath there is going to be a fine puree of ricotta cheese.
Mm. Lovely.
Wow.
And on top, we'll sprinkle some dried dulce seaweed to get a little Iceland into...
I know, exactly. And a little salt, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Exactly. That sounds delicious.
Yep.
And it so when you say you smoke it, do you have to give it a light cure first and then you smoke it? Or?
I just salt it just the way I was going to cook it regularly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when I've flown over Iceland, there's not too many trees. What the heck do you smoke with there? Like a peat bog or...
seaweed.
Birds.
Bird's nest?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Birch.
Birch.
Oh, birch.
Birch.
I know. I was like, we are having a language barrier.
I know, exactly. That's all right.
No, birch, yeah.
All right, so then when the char is over, we get into some salted cod or bacalao with langoustine.
Mmm. Love langoustine. Mm.
Yeah. We are going to simply grill them or pan fry them.
Mm-hmm.
And serve them with tortelli. With bacalao inside.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Bacalao filling.
Nice.
That we're going to coat with a lemon and lemongrass sauce. And there's going to be like a fresh tomato concass served with this. Roasted either pine kernels or sunflower seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. And then the bacalao is like, is it a cod that you brought with you, or is it, do you make it here?
No, we got a ship from Iceland.
Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah.
And every year, what I look forward to most about these Icelandic dinners is the lamb. You bring over the lamb or sometimes the venison with you. What makes it so spectacular? I just find it very pure.
Yeah, it has this really, really fine texture.
Mm-hmm.
It's grass fed. It's free range, so it's pure, very pure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is delicate. In fact a natural product, which is probably what you're picking up on, that it's raised on what it's meant to eat, and it gets to roam and be free on the Iceland range,
which is quite large,
yes.
And cold and wet. But if you've never stopped on Iceland Air to stop in the Reykjavik, you got to do it. I got to do it. I got to get that done. And then for dessert, we have a skyr.
Yeah.
A skyr of the Vikings.
That is in our culture. This old recipe of making a yogurt. It's called skyr. Very high in protein. And we have incorporated that into a very, very delicate, nicely made panna cotta. Served with rhubarb and strawberries.
Lovely.
And what makes skyr different than perhaps like the American yogurts that we're used to eating pretty much for a lot of people on a daily basis?
Well, it's probably similar if you compare it to something similar to Greek yogurt.
Okay, so it's a little bit thicker.
It's thicker.
A little bit more rich.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Tangy.
A bit more sour.
Yeah, a little sour. Tangier.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right, so a few things that you could do to help celebrate the taste of Iceland right here all over Seattle. It's happening still today. Tomorrow on Sunday, you could get to the Shortfish Returns, Iceland's premier short film festival at the Nordic Museum over there in Ballard. That's the brand new museum in Ballard. All the other events really are done by the time you're listening to this. So, but
you can probably still have dinner at Cuoco on the 14th.
Oh, but you can still do Cuoco.
Yeah,
exactly.
Come have dinner.
Go watch some an Icelandic film and then come to Cuoco afterwards and meet the chef.
Sounds like a perfect day.
All right. So we are going to listen to just a minute of Bjork, and then we can decide if I'm actually crazy.
That's a long minute,
or
Tom.
Not.
It could be a long minute. If I'm at a red light and I'm listening to this, I might want to go through the intersection.
How dare you? Bjork is amazing.
I'm kidding.
All right. Thanks to Chef Hakan Mar Overson. You can meet him on Sunday at Cuoco down there in South Lake Union. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Douglas, Terry Rotero, KDO in the kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time for the Baker's Corner with pastry chef Brittany Bartleben here on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotero, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
Welcome to the show, Brittany.
Thank you.
It's
for
always a
me.
Lively affair with you here.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Are you excited? The holidays are on their way.
There's a lot of emotions I'm feeling, but excitement is one of them.
Excitement is one of them.
Mixed feelings. Yes. Yeah.
Do you? What are your mixed feelings about Halloween?
I love Halloween.
Do you?
Yeah. It's not a huge affair at the bakery, but because it's just one day, whereas the holidays is 2 months of chaos. But it's really fun. We can put cobwebs and orange things on orange sprinkles on anything we want, and we always do a group costume, which is really fun. And yeah,
what do you mean by that? For the whole bakery,
the bakery girls, as well as the pastry kitchen staff, we try and coordinate a little bit. We'll be roller derby people.
All right, our subject today is pudding.
Pudding, yes.
And I love me some pudding.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
My mom always made pudding, but mostly from box mixes.
Yes, yeah.
And always served it warm.
Like chocolate pudding warm or vanilla pudding warm?
I don't like warm pudding.
I feel like if it's a chocolate pudding or vanilla pudding, I would prefer it chilled.
Yeah.
But there are a bevy of puddings out there that should be served
warm. The only pudding I've ever had that I had warm that I kind of liked was rice pudding. So
agreed.
Let's talk pudding.
Yeah.
Let's go down and dirty.
All right.
How do you make pudding, homemade pudding, instead of out of a box?
So you just need a few simple ingredients that you probably have, and that's milk, either gelatin or egg yolks used to set your pudding, and that's
sugar.
And that's pretty much it.
A little flour in some pudding?
Some. I usually don't use flour. Cornstarch is a great thickener. The chocolate pudding that I like to use to make it taste like the little pudding cups that you would get. The snack pack.
Oh, my God. Really? You love those?
Well, you know, it's nostalgic.
You could be a kid in the 80s without loving
I was going to say, mine was definitely the butterscotch pudding. I still have fond memories of it. That's like a thing that you had in the 80s. Yeah. The 80s were a very big time for processed food.
For terribly, terribly bad processed foods that we all romanticize in our memories. But now we can recreate them.
That's right.
So for a snack pack style pudding, you just need to make sort of a panna cotta, a chocolate panna cotta. And so that's going to be milk, cocoa powder, gelatin, and sugar. And then you cook that up till your gelatin dissolves. And then you let it set overnight. And then the next day, you take it and whip it.
Whip it like a food processor or with a whisk?
KitchenAid
with a paddle.
Oh, okay.
And it just breaks down the gelatin and makes it glossy. And it's just the exact texture that you fell in love with when you were a kid. But it tastes real.
This is a hot, hot tip.
So that and graham crackers?
Oh, yeah.
You know, home.
Delicious. I highly suggest picking up Stella Parks' book, Brave Tart. She's got a great pudding section in her cookbooks, and it's all these puddings that we loved as kids, but made with real ingredients.
Because most pudding recipes that I've personally tried, which is not to say very many, but that is a very specific type of texture if you grew up with it, which is kind of that very glossy, silky,
but light at the same time.
Pudding.
Whereas I think typically we would think we need to make a pastry cream instead, where you cook it on the stove and it's much thicker.
That's what I think.
Yeah. Which is lovely in its own.
But that's just not the way it has to be then.
Yeah, exactly.
It can be all the ways.
Yes.
Just like rice pudding. My wife makes the best rice pudding in the world.
I can't be because I make the best rice pudding.
Ooh, rice pudding off.
Oh, yeah.
The glove is down.
Gentlemen.
Because I'm going to be testing both of them.
No, I just... People either love or hate rice pudding.
Oh, I love
the texture. Rice pudding and tapioca pudding are both very controversial.
She made one last night. I mean, it's out of the oven and she's like, wait till it cools off. I'm like, no.
Also, she makes a baked version.
She bakes a rice pudding. So she takes rice that's already cooked, or you cook your rice ahead of time. And then you mix eggs, milk, sugar, vanilla, and then soaked up some raisin in rum, and put that into the rice pudding. So it's like a flan with rice. It's like, who doesn't like that?
That's not to like.
That stuff, you bake it. It comes out, in a boiling water pan, and then you just come out of the oven and then you let it cool off a little bit so you can put it to your lips. Man, it's just like the most. I can't eat. I mean, she makes a Pyrex, like it's a 9-inch Pyrex. I mean, that's pretty deep. I can't eat the whole thing, sadly enough. I can sit in front of that thing and go. You know how some people can sit in front of a 2 pints of Häagen-Dazs and eat the whole thing? I can't do that. I'm not an ice cream that much. But rice pudding?
Yeah. My favorite rice pudding ever was at John George von Richteren's place in the meatpacking district in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. Market.
Market.
Yeah.
Was it called Market or Market Spice? Market, I think.
Market, yeah.
And he did a jasmine rice pudding, a little bit of coconut milk in the custard part. But then he garnished it with all these fresh fruit pearls.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it was little tiny pearls of cantaloupe and honeydew or little pearls of
lovely
huckleberries and blueberries and raspberries or whatever it was. And then he took some fruits and made gelatin out of the fruits, and then little pearls of this sparkling gelatin. It was gorgeous and delicious.
Yes.
Yeah, it's called a spice market.
Yeah. And so if you wanted to do something like that, let's just get to your base, you just literally have to steep your milk or your cream in with Earl Grey or some sort of fragrant or jasmine tea, right?
Yeah, you can really take it up a notch with the rice puddings because you've got that base. So yeah, like you were saying, tea, spices. You can caramelize your sugar first and do a caramel rice pudding. Mm-hmm. But I do, for me, rice pudding is all about the little bits and bobs you put on top of it. I really like to reconstitute dried pears and put those on top or dried fruits.
What I like is that custard that's baked, like little brown you know, that crust. And you get on top of the egg cooked. Oh, I love that. When I was a kid, my mom used to make that all the time. Not necessarily with rice, but just the flan part and bake it. I mean, she had no time
to
make...
It's
clafoutis has flour in it, but this has no... This is just egg, sugar, and milk. You bake it, and then you have what we call œuf au lait en France, in France. And we serve that as a dessert, man.
You know what I did not know I liked, and that is tapioca pudding.
Oh, I love tapioca pudding.
Yeah, we did some testing for the bento, the Nordstrom store. I thought I hated it. I honestly
really
did.
I just had never had
a good one. I'd tried again the commercial tapioca
stuff that
puddings,
you can buy pre-made in the grocery store.
It's a tough sell on a dessert menu, and so it's just not a road I'd ever gone down. I did find I prefer the small pearl, and you have to soak them overnight.
Yeah, small
it
beads.
It takes forever.
For sure.
Yeah, but it's so simple. You just take your tapioca pearls that you've soaked overnight, drain them. Milk, sugar, a vanilla bean, couple of eggs, couple of minutes on the stove.
Yeah.
Just delicious.
Yeah, it's a very quick, actually, a very quick dish.
It has no flavor, so really it's all about the texture that you like.
Exactly, yeah, the little bouncy, chewy.
I would actually do a version of it. I mean, this is kind of not as decadent, but for breakfast, doing like a chia seed pudding with the soaked tapioca pearl balls in it, just to give it a little bit more something
nutrition
in the morning.
Well.
Yeah, exactly. The nutrition from the
good
chia.
You're
going to
eat pudding for breakfast.
Yeah, I mean, you know, coconut, you can try to convince yourself
mangoes,
a little bit.
Put some mangoes and it feels like breakfast.
So that's a popular thing now, chia seed pudding. Yeah. That's the same idea, right? You bloom the seeds?
Exactly. Yep. The seeds have a natural thickening powder power. Mm-hmm. And so, you can use chia seed in jam as well.
Yeah.
Side note. But,
I love those chia
seeds. To replace the pectin?
Yes.
Or to add on to the pectin?
So add a little bit more, a little texture as well.
Here's potentially a controversial pudding for this group. What about banana pudding? I know Tom has some very strong feelings about the banana.
Believe this, but I agree with Tom about banana pudding.
Really?
I don't care for
neither
pudding.
Of you like banana pudding.
This is where Tom and I do agree. I don't care for a cooked banana unless it's in a banana bread or something like that.
Okay.
Whereas cooked into a pudding, or sometimes it's just layered in between puddings, the bananas get brown and slimy, and it's just super gross to me.
I'm with you. I think they're good in puddings. I also think they're good caramelized. If you caramelize a banana, it's always a
like
nice little thing.
Old school bananas Fosters.
With a little rum and some ice cream, I mean, that doesn't go bad.
But
it's not a fruit that comes to first of mind, especially in the creamy texture kind of like that.
Especially during strawberry season.
Exactly.
You have all these times to eat bananas, and then people do it during strawberry season or blueberry season or peaches.
How dare you?
Okay, one quick primer on butterscotch pudding, because that, like KDO, is probably my all-time favorite pudding.
Yes. So butterscotch technically
only have a minute, so.
Is brown sugar, and that takes a really long time to dissolve to make a proper butterscotch. So my cheater trick is to caramelize white sugar and then add molasses to mimic brown sugar, and then add either rum or bourbon or scotch whiskey. And
that is if you're in a hurry. If you're not in a hurry.
I've never had booze in my butterscotch pudding. Did you?
Not that I know
of. Oh, I always
do. But is that
it's a Brittany Bartolet
thing. I was going to say, Brittany likes to throw in a little splishy splash.
You have to put bourbon in there. Yeah. That's actually the base of it.
Yes. I love bourbon in my butt.
I'm a big booze guy into all my desserts. And not because I want to drink, just because I want that flavor.
Depth of flavor, acidity. Yeah, it just warms things up. Yeah.
Right. In that particular case, you're not really drinking alcohol.
Next show, let's do bread puddings, because I feel like that's entirely...
Yeah, we haven't even got into bread
or grain puddings
Cool. All right. Yeah. We'll do that next show.
All right.
Something to look forward to. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Pudding part two.
All right. We're going to head into Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. And as I mentioned before, I'm a little tired today from the big outing yesterday. And so I'm hiring... it's not cheating if I tell you. But I'm hiring somebody from the audience.
I know. You're looking directly at me like, Katie, don't call me out.
Yeah, exactly. On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. I'm Tom Douglas.
I'm Terry Rocha, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O. And that's Janet messing with her mic over there.
Sorry, Janet.
I thought I forbid Janet to come back and do this because she told us so badly.
You were trying to do that, but...
We don't listen to you.
This is Chef Janet. She's chef here at the Hot Stove Society. And because Janet is here, I'm actually going to ask an audience member, because I pre-warned you I was going to cheat today. I'm a little under the weather.
That's a nice excuse you get there.
This young lady has volunteered to help me, right? It's a $25 gift card to the gift shop after the show. It's well paid. So come on over here. Give me your name.
I'm going to throw a twist in because actually I had tasked her with giving her her name because I wanted to play for her. So she has actually got your fate specifically in her hands now. She could feed you potentially the wrong answer if she really wants your prize. Do you see how this is going to work?
Oh, I'm Sonam.
Sonam?
Yeah.
All right, Sonam, it's you and I against these two dweebs.
All right,
Janet,
so,
knucklehead. Janet, I'll help you. Sonam, and you help me.
Are you familiar with this game? Have you heard it? Okay, yes. So each of you are going to get 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct wins. Whoever gets the least amount correct is the loser. To your retro, should you lose today, what will you give Sonam?
I'm going to give... Well, we just talked about my perfume, and, you know, it's right around the holiday season, so I'm going to give a set of the perfume, value 130 buckaroos.
A set of fragrances.
Eau de toilette, hand soap, and diffusers under the brand...
You, too, can smell like a toilet.
That's for the people like Tom.
Tom, just in case she wants to throw this whole thing, get her $25 and a gift from you, what are you going to give away should she lose?
I'm doing a turkey class here.
All things turkey, legs, breasts, whole birds.
What is that, Janet? I can't remember the date.
Sonam, are you a vegetarian?
No.
Oh,
no,
that's too bad. Right, that was going
to
be
fun. I'm going to give her a ticket to my turkey class hilarious. Here at the Hot Stove Society.
Wow, turkey class.
Wow. Are you excited about that?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, Janet. Should you lose today, what
impossible.
Will you give away? Impossible. Not even possible.
Be careful.
I just
Don't
jinxed
jinx yourself.
Myself. I just jinxed myself. 2 tickets to class on October 17th. 2 tickets to Julia Tertian and her new cookbook release.
Terry, you like to go first.
Yes.
Here is your first question, sir. What sometimes fruit makes the base of gazpacho soup?
Avocado.
Incorrect. We were looking for tomato. Terry, lox and gravlax both come from a word that means what fish?
I'm going to go with cod. I don't know. I know salmon would be
salmon
the first one.
Was, but the lox. The answer, though, you really said cod there. Pretty.
No, because. Okay.
Sorry, chef.
Can I tell you my train of thoughts?
I don't want to get murdered by the other two contestants on the way out of here today. Your third question.
Cool.
The word poultry comes from the French word poulet.
Yes.
For what obvious bird?
Chicken.
There you go. That's.
I know that one.
Thank goodness. I was going to be very concerned
I wanted to go back to the lox story because I think it's a... I thought it was a very old... Okay, never mind.
Okay, your fourth question. Little worms is the disgusting English translation of what skinny pasta that also finds its way into Vietnamese cuisine?
Vermicelli.
Vermicelli is correct. Very nice. And your final question...
That's Italian, by the way.
Your final question. You pop your food into boiling water, then into ice water to freeze the cooking process. That's the gist of what pale-sounding process...
Shocking. You put it in hot water and then you put it in cold water, mm-hmm. right? You're asking me about which one of the two.
Pale sounding process is that?
Blanching, pale.
Blanching, that's right.
That's the trick right there.
Do we give him that last one? No.
Did you say no?
Sorry, Chef.
Son of a
gun. Two out of five.
Today's my day.
We had breakfast a little later than normal. I think maybe that.
Yeah, that's playing on my stomach.
It's okay.
I'm still hungry.
All right, Janet, would you like to go next?
Yes, please.
Your first question. What veggie is known for its anti-cancer properties and for not being the favorite of our 41st president?
That would be broccoli.
That is correct. He is not a fan. True or false, despite being a vegetable botanically, rhubarb is officially a fruit for the purposes of tariffs. Is that true or false?
I would say that's true.
That is correct. It is true. A judge actually had to decide on this. Let's see. Your next question.
Is it a Republican judge or a Democratic judge?
We'll talk about it off air.
Okay.
Pirates stuck without grog can avoid scurvy with potatoes since they're packed with what vitamin?
Wait, run that by me again.
Okay.
Please.
Pirates, all those pirates you know, stuck without grog, that favorite beverage of pirates, can avoid scurvy with potatoes since they're packed with what vitamin?
Vitamin C.
Vitamin C is the one that staves off the scurvy. Your fourth question, mushrooms have them under their caps. Sharks have them on the sides of their heads. What ridgy things am I talking about?
Fins.
No.
What?
No.
Gills.
No.
Oh, golly.
No.
Golly gosh, we're talking about gills. That's what we're
gills.
Talking about.
Oh, for
yeah.
God's
okay.
Sakes.
It's okay. I wanted
to give Tom a chance.
Yeah, you're still doing good. Okay, your fifth question. Prickly pear and Engelmann's hedgehog are part of what plant family?
Cactus.
That is correct, Janet. Very nice showing today.
Nice. Four out of five.
We'll forgive you for that gills comment.
Thank you very much.
All right, Team Douglas is coming up now.
All right.
I can't wait.
How are you feeling as our guest, Sanam?
Good.
Good.
I got
after my show.
I feel like this is going to be a really great duo. Unless, of course, you want to go to his turkey class.
I know.
In which case.
Yeah, don't forget. He's got a nice turkey class.
Yeah, you could throw the whole thing. Just saying. Just think about it. You still have $25 in your pocket. First question for your team. Italians call bow tie pasta farfalle, which is their word for what chill insect? Very chill insect.
We're going to say butterfly.
That's right. The butterfly is correct. Your second question. What small potato dumplings are often served in pasta sauces?
Gnocchi.
Gnocchi is correct.
Oh,
so
my
delicious.
God. Two for two.
You guys are doing pretty great. And this is a good duo over here. Third question. Dried meats like pepperoni and prosciutto can be part of what Italian appetizer course that means before food, not against noodles?
Antipasta.
That's correct. Wow, you guys are really on a roll. Your fourth question, pizza is the whole reason why mozzarella is America's most popular cheese. What variety is a fairly close second in most popular cheeses?
Cheddar.
Cheddar is correct. Your last and final question for a potential perfect score. You can use plantains if you're a weirdo, but the Vietnamese cake banh quả is more commonly made with what related fruit? Banh chui? Banh chua. I don't know how to say this word. Banh chui. Sorry to all of our Vietnamese listeners.
This is all Chef Tom Douglas, but banana flowers.
Banana flowers?
Or just banana.
Am I not even close?
The answer was simply just bananas.
She had it right.
She had it right. You let this guy push you around because you thought because he had restaurants that he knew.
There you go. Anyway, congratulations. You won $25 gift card and you won a
beautiful scent of lule.
Thank you.
A whole set.
Nice job. If you'd like to be part of our show, you can go to send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Tina Noll at Large Media. Our associate producer is Sarah Leibovitz. And sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. If you want to be part of our studio audience, go to HotStoveSociety.com and buy tickets for only $15. Remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Stitcher, Apple Podcast, or download the Cairo Radio app. and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.